You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, we talk with a state champion auctioneer about what it takes to be a fast talker, and we might learn a few tricks to improve our own bid calls. First, it's time for a weekly review of state news. A member of the Wisconsin National Guard is under scrutiny after criticizing a decision by Governor Evers to recall troops from the southern border. The state's Natural Resources Board voted to purchase a conservation easement in Iron County, and Oshkosh is getting a new pro women's basketball team. Robert Mentzer is a statewide living and storytelling editor for the USA Today Network Wisconsin. He's based in Wausau. Rob, welcome back.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, some of the big news this week, Rob, is the state budget. We're going to talk about that later in the show. But some of the other big news, Governor Evers said he's bringing Wisconsin National Guard troops back from the southern U.S. border. What was Evers' reasoning for calling them back?
Well, so you have to understand the circumstances by which they were deployed there in the first place. So Governor Scott Walker sent troops there to the southern border in Arizona at the request of President Donald Trump just last year. It was part of President Trump's campaign to bulk up security on the border and increase militarization of the border. And like Democrats have a different view of that issue, so it's not really surprising that a Democratic governor who doesn't share those views would make the choice to bring those troops back. And Evers' statement is that he just doesn't see a rationale for why they need to be there.
And then as a follow-up, we have this congressional representative from Illinois, Adam Kinzinger, a Republican there, who's also a member of the Wisconsin National Guard, publicly criticized Evers' decision that has him under some official scrutiny. Can you explain that for us?
Yeah, who knew that, Rob, that you could be a congressman from Illinois and a member of the Wisconsin Air National Guard? But, good for Kinzinger. That's how he's choosing to serve, so that's great. There are rules that govern people in the military that are very different from the rules that govern a congressman, or actually you or I, for that matter. So in the same way that, like, a member of the U.S. military can't speak out politically against the president, it is part of state statute in Wisconsin that that the members of the state's National Guard can't criticize their commander-in-chief, who is the governor. So when Kinzinger posted publicly on Twitter, his view that that Evers was misguided in bringing back those National Guard troops, he does appear to have violated that statute.
And have we heard anything more from Congressman Kinzinger since that initial criticism?
Well, so it has triggered a response that Evers' administration says they're going to look into this. I think in practice, it's not very likely that Representative Kinzinger is going to get thrown in jail for this, and I'm not sure anyone actually wants to see that. But it's a bit of a political embarrassment to him. I think it may be that he won't be so free with his statements in the future.
And then moving on to other stories, Rob, last weekend in the Neenah area, there was this horrific 131 car pileup during a snowstorm there. Sadly, one person died in that accident. We're finding out more about the aftermath and some of the response to the accident. You and your colleagues were looking into this. What do we know about how the emergency response played out here?
Yeah, we've had a lot of coverage of this crash. So, absolutely, it was one of the largest, maybe the largest such crash in Wisconsin's history. So, you said 131 cars. There are 71 people injured overall. And so we've, as a news organization, USA Today Network Wisconsin, has continued to follow this, find out more information about what happened, about what it was like for the people, stuck on the side of the road in these conditions and so on. One fact that was reported just yesterday was that according to the Winnebago County Sheriff's Department, 95% of the vehicles involved in the crash will be totaled.
Wow.
And you can see in some of the images released by the Sheriff's Department just how mangled and broken up the cars were in the crash. So to answer your question about the response, one of the most striking follow-up stories we've had was by my colleague Davey Shastri, who looked at the way community members responded. And so in particular, it was a somewhat unlikely combination of a strip club, a church, and a gas station, which all, opened their doors to people who were stranded to help them stay warm. So this happened in the town of Nina on I-41, and nearby is this place, Stars Cabaret, which is a strip club. The owner there walked across to, like, where the first responders were responding to the crash, and offered up his place. People can come there and get warm, and they did. It was the same story at the Gloria Day Lutheran Church and at a nearby Quick Trip. So it's kind of I think that's kind of great, right? That's community. People were chipping in and making their spaces available to help the people who needed it.
Talking to Rob Metzer from USA Today Network, Wisconsin, looking at some of the big stories in Wisconsin news this week. The Wisconsin Natural Resources Board, Rob, voted unanimously this week to spend $4.8 million to buy a conservation easement on land in Iron County. What can you tell us about this land?
The state is buying 14,000 acres of forest land up in Iron County. So this is part of the state's Forest Stewardship Program. It's a long-standing program that preserves public forest land. So this purchase creates a new tract of Northwoods Forest that will be publicly owned and which will be accessible to the public for skiing or hiking or fishing. This particular tract connects to an existing stand of state-owned forest. It's about the same size. So overall, it's like a 32,000-acre plot of contiguous land that that the state owns in that area now.
And this is set up in such a way that existing roads will stay there to provide access for, as you said, things like skiing, hunting, and other outdoor recreation.
Right, and it is managed forest, so there is still like logging, cutting that happens there. There are state contracts for that for private companies, paper mills, and so on. But it's maintained as forest land, and that's sort of the point of the stewardship program, right? So they'll maintain these 16 miles of road. That definitely helps the timber industry that needs to run their big heavy trucks across there and get the logs where they need to go.
And finally, Rob, it was recently announced that Oshkosh will get its own professional women's basketball team. Can you tell us about the Wisconsin Glow?
I think this is very cool. Yeah, so this is a minor league team. It's not linked to the WNBA, but it's professional basketball in Oshkosh. The women's team follows the Wisconsin Herd, a men's minor league basketball team that has played in Oshkosh for a couple of years now. And so it's kind of cool. Oshkosh sort of has a hoops scene. They're going to play at the Menominee Nation Arena in Oshkosh. And this week they went with the Wisconsin Glow, and there's like a lightning bug logo. But I do think we should like pause and say there were some other options for the team names. This is true. There were people were asked to vote. They could have been the Wisconsin Hops or the Oshkosh Bandanas. I feel glad. I think we can all be glad they did not go with the Fox Valley Vixens. But they also passed up the opportunity to be the Oshkosh Fighting Sturgeon.
Ooh.
There's a missed opportunity. But you know what? The Glow is good. Wisconsin Glow is good, too. So.
All right. Well, we'll follow their progress there. Rob, thanks, as always, for joining us.
All right. Thank you.
Robert Metzer is a statewide living and storytelling editor for the USA Today Network Wisconsin. He was with us to talk about some of the top news happening around the state. The bid call of the auctioneer is a unique sound, and there's a lot more to the job than we might realize. Being a fast talker is not the only qualification. It takes special training and years of practice and experience. Jenny Markham-Gale joins us now in the studio. She's an auctioneer and bid assistant for Bravo Benefit Auctions and Consulting Group. She was recently named 2019 champion at the Wisconsin Champion Auctioneer Contest. Jenny, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
You got into auctions at a really young age. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I did. I actually grew up in an auctioneer family. Both my dad and brother were both auctioneers. So you bet I was probably 10 years old and had to do a lot of the jobs as a child to help out the family auction business.
Whether you're a cashier, right?
That's right. Cashier, running sheets, whatever it took.
And how did you decide, hey, I want to actually be up there. I want to be the auctioneer.
You know, I have to tell you, when I graduated from high school and basically said, hey, see ya, you know, and I went and did my thing and went on to college, got my bachelor's degree, and then, you know, worked in other industries. And I always had that love for the auction industry. And I thought, gosh, what? I would really like to get back into it. So I researched and I found that there was a benefit auction specialist certification offered through the National Auctioneers Association. And it was for fundraisers. And I thought, you know what? This is my thing. I think that's what I want to do. So that's what brought me back into it, even though I've helped. I've always helped, even though I had other jobs. But yes.
So you love auctioneering. What is it about being up in an auction that's exciting for you?
Yes. What is so exciting is that competitive bidding environment. And it's exciting, and the fear of loss that the bidders have, and it's so fun to get them engaged.
And benefit auctioneering, talk about that specialty. Who do you end up doing benefits for?
Yeah, who I work with is a lot of nonprofit organizations, and I work a lot with schools. We work a lot with foundations, humane societies, Make-A-Wish Foundation. Just there's a lot of different organizations that we work with.
Is there a difference between an auction for a charity versus, you know, a farm auction or the other kinds of auctions that you've seen in the past?
Absolutely, there is. With the fundraising auction, it's a little bit different. We have to structure our chant a little different. We have to go a little bit slower because of the folks that are sitting in those seats, they don't attend auctions every day. So we kind of have to slow down that chant a little bit, be a little bit more engaging, have some fun with it.
So usually at the more normal auctions, there's going to be regulars in the crowd. They know how this works.
Absolutely. They're bidding maybe with a wink, right?
Or really?
A head nod. Yeah. So it's a little different.
No, wait, I'm kind of a twitchy fella when I'm just sitting around. I'd be worried I'd start accidentally bidding up and all of a sudden I owe a lot of money on a tractor or something.
That's right. And it happens. You know, I have to tell you, I'm a pretty good ringman also, so I can watch for those bids. Kind of mastered the craft of reading that audience and
ringman.
Crowd. Yes, a ringman. And I seriously, but at the end of the auction, I swear I can tell people how many times they touch their hat or scratch their ear, right? Because I'm always on the lookout.
Wow.
For
so for these fundraising ones, though, I assume there's a more very distinct way people bid so they don't accidentally bid things up.
That's right.
The
yeah.
non-professionals. So,
yeah.
Like, what are some of the main ways they do that?
Yeah, so the main ways that they bid, they all have paddles or bidder cards, and we have them raise them in the air. So, yeah.
We're talking to Jenny Markham-Gale. She is the 2019 champion of the Wisconsin Champion Auctioneer Contest. She's been involved with auctions from a very early age. All right, Jenny, I've been holding off. People want to hear more. I think they probably ask you all the time about the chant, you called it, the talking, the patter people might think of it as.
That's right. It's called the auctioneer's chant. And basically, it's that fast talking situation that gets people excited to bid. And there's a lot of characteristics to an auctioneer in that chant. But what I did was I kind of broke it down into three components. And if you want me to get into that,
yes,
I can kind of start getting into that. So I would say, basically when we're an auctioneer, we'll say, I have $5, will you give 10? Okay, mm-hmm. So that's kind of the basis. And what we do is we practice those numbers. There's a number scale. So every time before I compete or before I go to an auction, I work on my numbers. I'll do it in quarters. I'll do it in halves, fives, tens, like this. We'll get 5, 10, 15, 20, 25, 30, 35, 40, 45, 50, and then I'll go back down the scale. 50, 45, 40, 35, 30. 2.5, 5, 7.5, 10, 12.5, 15, 17.5, 20, 2.5, 25, 22.5, 20, 17.5, 15, 12.5, 10. All right, so.
So you're soliciting the opening bid with that, right?
That's kind of more a warm-up for
okay.
me.
Oh, that's your warm-up. I get it. Okay.
Yeah. So if you would you like right. to maybe practice, we'll do tens. We'll okay. go 10, 10, 20, 20, all the way up to 100, and then backwards.
Okay.
So this is something that I do to warm up for an auction. Okay?
All
so
right.
join me. 10, 10, 10, 10 20,
20,
20, 30, 30, 40, 40, 50, 50, 50, 50, 60, 60, 60, 70, 70, 70, 80, 80, 90, 90, 100, 90, 90, 80, 80, 80, 70, 70, 60, 60, 50, 50, 40, 40, 30, 30, 20, 20, 10, 10. Didn't he do good? All right. Now,
okay. now it gets tricky, though. You gave me a piece of paper now with a practice
right.
on it.
The second component of an auctioneer chant is rhythm. An auctioneer has to have rhythm and some voice inflection. And how we attain that as auctioneers is we practice tongue twisters. Here's one I like to do. I go, Betty Botter bought some butter, but she said this butter's bitter. If I put it in my batter, it'll make my batter bitter, but I bought a bit of butter, butter. All right, you get it. Now, there's another one that I'll do, and it's called Tommy Atatimus. Sounds like this. Tommy Atatimus took two T's, tied them to the top of two tall trees. So do you want to join me?
Okay.
We'll do it
Ready?
Twice.
Okay.
Ready?
Tommy Atatimus took two T's, tied them to the top of two tall trees.
Okay. Tommy Atatimus took two T's, tied them to the top of two tall trees. There you go.
Okay. Okay. I could work on that.
And the third component of an auctioneer chant, as I break it down simple, is the words that we put in between the numbers. Mm-hmm. They're called filler words. All right. My five filler words that I use a lot are you able to buy, would you give, dollar, now, and bid. Okay, so if you combine the rhythm with the number and the filler words, it'll sound like this. We'll get five on it, would get $10 there, would get 10, 20 bid, 30 there, would get 40 able to buy it, $40, would get 50, sir, 50, 50 now, would get 50 able to buy it, $60, 70, 70 there, would get $70 now, would get 70, sold it your way, $60.
Now, not every auctioneer is going to use those same filler words, right? That's kind of where you get to put some of your own personality into it.
That's true. Every auctioneer, those filler words, they're different for every auctioneer because
really?
It just depends what rolls off of your tongue. Like my dad uses different filler words than I do. I don't even know what my father's filler words are, believe it or not, because you have to focus on what works for you mm-hmm. as an auctioneer. So,
and whatever keeps you rolling there.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So did you have to experiment with different filler words and you realized that one just gums up the works?
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, I have to tell you, that auctioneer's chant, especially mine too, it changes, you know, with each event and you find things that work better for you as you go along. So
what speed would you go at for a kind of a greenhorn charity auction? If people like me are out there who are just trying to figure out what the heck's going on, what would be the pace there?
Mm-hmm. And sometimes we're dealing with, you know, some big numbers there too. It might be 1,000. Who'll give 1,000 there? Would get 1,000 able to buy it? $1,000. Are you in at 1,000, Rob? Would you
I'm
like
not.
To be 2,000 now? I think you should. 1,000. It's
so
only
is,
money, Rob.
Is there a persuasive element kind of because ideally the group you're raising money for wants to see bigger bids. So you're trying to coax a little bigger
yes,
bid out of people.
Absolutely. And you know, I have to tell you, every time we do a live fundraising auction, we bring in a team. And actually, it's my dad, my brother, and myself. And
okay.
when I'm the auctioneer and my dad, my brother are out there, they're an extension of that auctioneer and they're bringing excitement and energy and fun. You know, and we have our own little language that mm-hmm. we kind of talk to each other through the chant and through hand signals. So it really makes it a lot of fun when we can all work together as a team.
And are the other members of the team watching for, are they helping you watch for the bids as they come in, or is
Absolutely.
That all you?
Absolutely. They're helping me watch for the bids and then they're putting their fist up in the air and saying yes and trying to coax just one more bid out of them. Yeah.
Okay. So. Do you ever get, have you maybe in your earlier days especially, did you ever get tongue-tied up on the auction stage, the block, whatever it would be?
You know, I mean, it happens sometimes, but usually, you know.
Because I do here.
Yeah,
this is my, they
absolutely.
Pay me to do this, and
I'd
I get
lying,
tongue-tied
right,
sometimes.
I'd be lying, right, if I said no. Yeah, you know what? And actually, you just kind of go with the flow. You kind of pick up where you left off, and that's when you count on your ringmen, too. They'll kind of help you through it.
Now, what was going through your head the first time? Because you've been watching auctions. You've been watching your family do it. You've been watching other people auction. What was it like the first time you were making the bid calls up there?
The first time I was making the bid calls, I would say, you know, maybe a little nervous, but exciting at the same time to know that, hey, you know, here I am, something I always wanted to do, and to be in that position of helping deserving organizations, you know, raise money. It's pretty exciting.
And you mentioned you get a certification, there's training. Mm-hmm. What kind of things, apart from the tongue twisters, what kind of things do you do to get trained and certified to do
this? Oh, absolutely. You know, I have to tell you, actually, they have auctioneer school. There's a lot of great schools throughout the country. So I did go to an auctioneer school, and I did get special certification for benefit auctioneer, where I learned specifically about the fundraising trade. Mm-hmm. You know, we share experiences, we share knowledge about, hey, what sells, what's trendy, what works for you. So.
And do you have, like, I don't know, game show moments, Price is Right moments, where somebody realizes they won this thing they want and they just freak out?
Absolutely. Yes, it can get pretty exciting with some of these. You know, and one of the most exciting projects that I worked on happened here in Madison. It was the Bucky Badger finale event, where we sold the Bucky Badgers by live auction at the Kohl's.
Right, so these were statues they had up for people who weren't in Madison at the time. These are big statues, very differently decorated one to the other. And so you were auctioning those?
Actually, I was part of the auction team for that, and there was about 950 guests in the Kohl Center, right? And the energy and the excitement, wearing Badger red and white, and it was just, I mean, the momentum and the excitement in that room was amazing. And again, raising money for deserving organizations.
Have you ever been a bidder at an auction, or would that just be too weird for you? Oh, you do? Okay.
Yes. Yep.
Okay.
I try to go to all different kinds of auctions. And, you know, during the week, I'll hit up some auctions, and I like to just kind of see what's out there.
All right. Are you going to make a run for a champion again next year?
You know, so what happens as a Wisconsin champion in July, I compete internationally.
Oh, okay.
So in July, I will go to New Orleans to compete in the international contest. So, yeah.
All right. Good luck. Do Wisconsin proud.
That's right.
Jenny, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Jenny Markham-Gale is an auctioneer and bid assistant for Bravo Benefit Auctions and Consulting Group. She's a graduate of the Worldwide College of Auctioneering, and she was recently named 2019 champion at the Wisconsin Champion Auctioneer Contest. Governor Evers gave his first budget address last night. He outlined some of his administration's biggest policy goals for the next 2 years, and there was a lot of new ground covered. Among the most notable was a nonpartisan redistricting plan and an increase in the gas tax that Evers says he can offset with other changes. Jonah Ralston is an assistant professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin-Whitewater. Jonah, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Great to be with you.
Well, this covers a lot of ground, as Wisconsin state budgets typically do. Big picture, what's your reaction to what we heard from the governor last night?
Definitely. There were a number of major policy initiatives, particularly related to things like transportation, education, redistricting reform, and health care. Of course, a lot of these were not received very well by Republicans, and so a lot remains to be seen as to what actually will end up in the budget.
Now, Evers had gotten off to a rocky start before he took office after some lame duck bills passed in December of last year. He nodded to that last night. Here's a listen.
At times, we've succumbed to the trivial pursuit of political outposturing. At times, we let partisanship cloud the opportunity for compromise. And at times, we let power be the enemy of the good. So tonight, I want to be clear. This can't be one of those times. We cannot afford to play politics with this budget.
And the governor played some video of what he and his then running mate had done going around the state trying to form a people's budget. He shared ideas from people in different districts, including some Republican districts. He nodded toward bipartisanship. Do you think that any of that was successful, that there was any successful reaching across the aisles there?
Well, I think a telling moment was early on, actually, in the address when, after that video you mentioned, he said that, you know, if Wisconsinites can come to a room armed with these different ideas, listen to each other, compromise on solutions, we should be able to do that in this building, too. And interestingly, what happened is that the Democrats began clapping, and then they stood and continued applauding that comment, but the Republicans remained silent in the chamber. I think that is pretty much an indication of how they feel about compromise on this budget.
Now, a couple of the big items, and you touched on these, are not exactly budget items, which is a controversy all its own. But let's look at a couple now. The idea of nonpartisan redistricting in the state. This has been an argument for a while that instead of having lawmakers, in effect, draw the maps that determine who votes in which district, we should do another system maybe based on Iowa. What do we know about what the governor's calling for in this budget proposal?
Sure, yeah. There's been a growing movement in a number of states, actually, to move away from this. So, for example, some states like Michigan and Ohio more recently reformed their particular ways that they draw these legislative maps. Democrats won over 50% of the votes in the most recent election in 2018, but they only have about one-third of the seats in the Assembly. So it is clear that the Republican-drawn maps after the 2010 census have certainly heavily favored the Republican Party. But they've benefited from the existing partisan system, so I'm not sure how much interest Republicans will have in reforming it, even though we know there's strong public support for that reform. It's going to be difficult to draw fully representative maps, even if you move to an entirely nonpartisan method, because in Wisconsin, I think it's about a third of the Democratic vote in the state is actually concentrated in Madison and Milwaukee, which presents a lot of challenges for drawing districts then, because Republican voters tend to be more dispersed throughout the state.
One maybe incentive is that now they don't have a Republican governor who's going to sign whatever map they hand over. So there's some input this time from Democrats. Could that be an incentive to say, okay, maybe now this is the time, since there's divided control, we can do this alternate redistricting system?
I think that's a fair point. And in fact, that may be something that could actually tilt this in the favor of reform happening, is that indeed the governor does have a significant role in this. And if there's a stalemate, it'll end up in the courts, which has actually happened a number of times in Wisconsin. And so maybe to stave that off, they would actually consider implementing some kind of nonpartisan reform.
Now, another not really fiscal item exactly, the governor talked about automatic voter registration. Automatically, you'd have to opt out, basically, of registering to vote when you did things like get a driver's license. Is that something that would fly with both parties in the legislature?
Well, we do know that in regard to that particular initiative, that when you have people opt out instead of opting in, it certainly does increase participation rates. And so this would make voting easier in the state. With the recent changes in voting, where it was actually made more restrictive, my guess is that Republicans would be potentially open to something related to this. But then again, the past record shows that, in fact, they've had no problems restricting voting qualifications either.
Talking to Jonah Ralston from UW-Whitewater, assistant professor of political science there, looking at Governor Evers' budget address last night. All right, let's get to some of the dollars and cents stuff. Evers plans to raise the gas tax to help pay for road construction and maintenance. This is a long-running point of contention in Wisconsin. Here's a little bit of his explanation for why he wants to do this.
Now, I want to be clear. Everyone's going to have to give a little to make this work. That's compromise. That's what it's called. We're all going to have to share the burden so that it's feasible for everyone and to make sure that we're not passing the buck on to the next generation.
All right, Governor Evers says raise the gas tax 8 cents a gallon, index it to inflation like we used to, but repeal what he called a hidden tax. This is something that Republicans have wanted to do in the past, this mandatory minimum markup law, a little complicated. Can you talk about this plan?
Sure. Yes, as you mentioned, we have indexed to inflation before. That practice ended under Governor Doyle in 2005, but prior to that, we had it in place for two decades. So this is not unprecedented, and it makes it easier for the tax to just raise with inflation than it is for politicians to have to take politically risky votes. In regard to that minimum markup law, what's interesting about that is, I mean, that's a particularly old law. It goes back to the origins of that, go back to the Great Depression. And really what they were meant to do is prevent retailers from selling goods at the low costs, with the idea being that it would spur local business. But analysis of states that have these laws haven't really found that they're meeting their policy goals. So, yeah, this is a potential area where the two parties can come to agreement. There's certainly more receptiveness to this idea in the Assembly than the Senate, though.
And this has been a problem even among Republicans when they had control of both chambers and the governor's office. And in polling, too, a lot of people in Wisconsin favor doing something to boost road maintenance and construction in Wisconsin. But when you ask about any particular change, gas tax increases, user fees, and so on, you don't get that much support. This is a tough issue to tackle.
Yes, I agree. In fact, of all the different issues that Governor Evers addressed in the budget, most of them had fairly good support amongst the public. But you're right, this is the one that actually showed the least amount of support in the public because, you know, it's a tax, and he was also proposing fee increases. And those are never easy for a politician to implement.
Another couple of GOP bills would be repealed under this budget. Some of the lame duck legislation and what's called by Republicans right to work laws affecting union membership. Those don't seem things that Republicans in the legislature would vote on in any case, right?
I agree. Yes, it seems highly unlikely that Republicans would be willing to reverse the changes they made to executive authority or some of the changes they made under Governor Walker. I mean, some of these were some of their keystone policies, there's really no incentive for them to undo those either.
Now, one of Governor Evers' biggest campaign promises was having Wisconsin accept federal aid to expand Badger Care under the Medicaid program. That's been a controversial issue. Governor Walker took a different path than most states when it came to that. Talk about what that would involve and whether it's likely to pass.
Right. So what this would do is actually expand the program in the state. So the number of low-income individuals who are covered would actually increase by several thousand. And by the infusion of federal money, it would actually save the state millions of dollars each year, so there are likely to be economic and social benefits. But the Republicans and legislature have been ideologically opposed to it. Many continue to support the legal challenges to the Affordable Care Act. There has been some receptiveness in the Senate to the idea, but there's strong resistance in the Assembly. And so at the moment, it seems unlikely to pass, even though this is something that would be generally supported by voters.
Talking to Jonah Ralston of UW-Whitewater about Governor Evers' first budget address last night. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What did you think of what the governor had to say, what he's calling for? Did you hear Evers lay out spending priorities that you agree with? Did you hear some ideas that you disagreed with? What do you think of the idea of taking this federal money to expand Badger Care? What do you think of the idea of increasing the gas tax, getting rid of this other law, the minimum markup law? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation about Governor Evers' budget address last night. Jonah Ralston is with us from UW-Whitewater. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think about a potential increase in the state's gas tax? How about the governor's plan to expand Badger Care, change the way we draw our voting maps in Wisconsin? What do you think could pass in the Republican legislature? Do you want to see both sides compromise or stick to their principles and their goals in budget negotiations? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. As we've been mentioning, Jonah, a lot of negative Republican response, I think it's fair to say, to what the governor said last night. Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald called this, quote, a 1,000-page press release, not a budget. Here's Assembly Speaker Robin Voss.
This is a budget that's based on somebody who spent too much time in Madison. That's the problem. They have spent time in a liberal bubble thinking that this is what the people of Wisconsin want. It isn't.
Is this a liberal budget, Jonah?
Well, it certainly does have some hallmarks in the sense of increasing spending. There are some tax increases on wealthier individuals and, you know, expansion of social programs. And so I think what is likely to happen is we're going to see potentially contentious budget process here. I'm not optimistic, in fact, that this budget is in place by July 1st when it needs to be.
And Governor Evers' strategy seems to be, and I think he's said this in the past, he wants to go to the people. He has highlighted, again, showing that video last night, talking to people in different districts around the state outside of the Madison bubble. Speaker Voss was talking about there, in effect, saying, hey, Republicans, I'm going to reach out to your voters on issues that I think they disagree or that they agree with me on to provide pressure. Is there any chance that that might actually be effective?
Well, certainly he has made attempts at overtures like that, and there are a number of things in here that are popular generally with the public. So, for example, medical marijuana was one of the things that Evers had mentioned in the budget. That has strong support amongst the public. So, yeah, I think he's, you know, picked a lot of issues that, in fact, a number of voters would actually be in favor of. But I'm not sure how advantageous it is for Republicans to compromise, because the last budget that was proposed and approved by Scott Walker is, in fact, the one we would be operating under if they miss that July 1st deadline. So there's not a lot of pressure for them to, you know, make any kind of significant deals, because they would, in fact, just be operating under the budget they would prefer.
Right. That's an important point. We are not the federal government here. We don't have shutdowns if a budget deal isn't reached on schedule.
That's right. Yeah. In Wisconsin. Now, that is actually a bit different than Illinois or Minnesota, but because of how we have our laws in place and the structure for budgeting, we would, in fact, just continue under the previous appropriations.
Let's go to our callers now. David is with us in Oshkosh. David, hello.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have a question/comment about the automatic voter registration. Minutes before Governor Evers had brought that point up, he had mentioned giving driver's license to undocumented people living in Wisconsin. Now, does that mean that undocumented immigrants are going to be allowed to vote in Wisconsin? And if so, I feel like that's an automatic deal breaker on the Republican side.
David, thanks for the call. And David brings up another issue that the governor had raised, allowing some undocumented people working in Wisconsin to get driver's licenses. Do we have that level of precision of, like, okay, if we're giving driver's licenses to people who can't by law vote, how do we make sure they don't end up with licenses that would allow them to somehow vote?
Right, yeah. So this would be a different license. It would be indicated in some way. Because when they go to vote, you have to be a citizen to vote, right? You have to have a registered address. So even people who are here on a visa, you know, they can't vote. And we already have procedures in place to ensure that that happens. They would not be able to register to vote. So there would have to be some kind of mechanism in place for that. It's a good point, though, and something that you would want to make sure to address in the policy.
David, thanks for the call. We're going out to Richard with us in Cambridge. Richard, hi.
How you doing?
Good. What did you want to bring up?
Well, it's interesting. I got on the phone to bring this up just as you were talking about Mr. Evers wanting to reach out more to the public and get a firmer grasp on public opinion and hopefully have that work for him and us. And my thought was, can't we get some of these issues on a referendum, even if it's not a binding referendum, which would be maybe nice in some cases, but things like the marijuana and some of the other powers that the governor has lost, and just a way to let the Republicans know, I'm hoping, I guess, that even Republicans don't like the way things have been going. It's not strictly economic. And so my question is, what about getting referendums on the ballot?
Richard, thanks a lot for the call. Interesting point, Jonah. We don't have, like many states do, we don't have binding referenda except on as part of the constitutional amendment process. What about advisory referenda, though?
Yes, this has been used before. And in fact, marijuana was something that was placed in a few different counties to garner, you know, some indication as to what voters want. But that's about as far as it goes. And so I'm not sure how much they influence politicians. Certainly the initiative process, like Michigan has, is something by which citizens are able to actually implement policy, which they have done for recreational marijuana, for example, and minimum wage increases. But I'm not sure that these advisory ones would really be too influential in our state.
Thanks for the call, Richard. We're talking to Jonah Ralston from UW-Whitewater, looking at Governor Evers' budget proposal and the Republican response. Back to your calls. Susan is with us in Brookfield. Susan, hello.
Hi. No questions, just a comment. I know I live in what is considered a very conservative part of the state. I totally support what Governor Evers is attempting to present. We're going to have to make a lot of changes to make up for the loss.
Susan, thanks a lot for the call. It's a reminder, even when we think of the conservative districts in the county surrounding Milwaukee or liberal districts in places like Madison and Milwaukee itself, there is still a variety of voters. It's never universal, Jonah.
Yeah, that's correct. And I think she brings up a good point. There are some consensus issues that I think you will find in this budget. For example, education. I doubt there will be many people who say we shouldn't increase it. There will be disagreement about the amount. But I think most people would agree that we would want to see additional funding in that area.
Thanks for that call. Mark joins us next in Three Lakes. Mark, hello.
Good evening. Thank you for taking my call. I would like to know what seniors are supposed to do about the $15 an hour wage. I started working, when I was a teenager at $1.65 an hour, saved my money, and now it doesn't go as far as it's supposed to. What am I supposed to do?
Mark, thanks for the call. I'm not sure exactly where Mark's going, but Governor Evers did propose a minimum wage increase, not to the full 15 off the bat. I think it would ladder up to 10 something, Jonah?
Yeah, the idea there is a smaller increase and to kind of phase it in over time. I think what the reasoning was on that is that in Minnesota, they did a pretty substantial increase in a short time period. And what they saw was that, there were higher wages in some of those low-paying service jobs, like the restaurant industry. But it also did lead to businesses decreasing some employment. And some of those costs were passed on to consumers in the form of higher prices. So I think the idea here with Evers is to raise it slowly because we know that the minimum wage has lost value over time, the federal minimum wage, that is, which our state is pegged at. And so the idea is to, try to get more purchasing power for folks that make that wage.
Jonah, that's all the time we have. A lot more we'll be talking about in the weeks to come. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
That's Jonah Ralston, Assistant Professor of Political Science at the University of Wisconsin, Whitewater. He was with us to talk about Governor Evers' first budget address last night and what comes next as the legislature begins their work on the budget. We'll be breaking down some of those issues on Central Time in the Morning Show in the weeks to come as the negotiations go on. We're looking to talk about that idea of Medicaid expansion, Badger Care expansion with federal funding here in Wisconsin, I think as soon as Monday. Also coming up Monday on Central Time, the state is overhauling the youth prison system. The state of New York has been through the process. Our guest shares some lessons from that experience that could help here in Wisconsin. There are lots of ways to book vacations, from travel agents to web services to direct booking options. Which one works best? A travel writer put them to the test and will get the results. And there have been some high-profile free agent signings in Major League Baseball lately, but a strike could be on the horizon in the seasons to come. We'll check out the future of baseball. That and more coming up Monday here on Central Time.